Hello, my name is Brandy Agerbeck, and my favorite thing is Harold and Maude.
Welcome to the Finding Favorites podcast, where we explore your favorite things without using an algorithm. Here's your host, Leah Jones.
Hi there, and welcome back to Finding Favorites. I'm Leah Jones. I think I'm in a groove now with the podcasting thing. I'll continue to learn in public. The sound will get better. The interviews will improve. But I'm having a lot of fun just with an excuse to call people and have very long conversations. So this interview today is with Brandy Agerbeck. Brandy is someone I've known. She's an internet friend who became a real life friend, which I think is a theme you're going to catch on to. Brandy is a graphic facilitator, an author, and a teacher of how to use visual thinking. And she is a costume guru. So, yeah, Brandy and I have a really wonderful conversation. We start talking about Harold and Maude. We talk about Rocky Horror Picture Show. We talk about the different types of functional art that our dads made. It was a really fun conversation about, I don't know, being like weird kids in Midwestern towns and finding weird movies that speak to you. I don't know. It was just like a really fun and lovely conversation, which is how it is to hang out with Brandy in real life. So I hope you get a sense from that. You should definitely check her out. Loosetooth.com is her website, where you can find out more information about her book, The Agerbeck Method. You can take classes with her and webinars and video series and learn about visual thinking. She's really one of my favorite people in Chicago. So please enjoy this conversation with Brandy Agerbeck, loosetooth.com, where we talk about Harold and Maude and many other things. Stay home, stay safe. Hello and welcome to Finding Favorites, a podcast where we talk to people about their favorite things and the beauty of recommendations without algorithms. Today, I am with one of my friends, Brandy Agerbeck, who I've known probably a decade, both online and in real life. We are in the same Halloween party circle, so totally. We definitely see each other every year. She is always in an outstanding costume, and I am always in a costume that got me in the door. Brandy, how are you today?
I'm great. And I have to say, I wish I had more chances in my life to make and wear costumes, but that's my single, you know, my Super Bowl of the year is making my Halloween costume.
Yeah. I love going to that party just to be an observer of great costumes. In addition to being a great costume maker, you're also a graphic facilitator, an author. You design excellent stickers and t-shirts. You're not a Jill of all trades because you are a master of graphic facilitation. But it is really astounding once people get to know you, all of the things that you do well. So I want to recognize that.
I love drawing, so I'm very, very thankful I get to draw for a living and use those skills in lots of different ways, from stickers to t-shirts, to facilitating meetings, to teaching visual thinking, to all that good stuff.
Before we dive into your favorite thing, how has this shelter in place been treating you?
You know, it's actually, you know, so many people I've talked to, they always start their answer to this type of question of like, I know this has been really hard, but I'm having a good time. Similarly, you know, it's like, you know, cause you can't ignore what's happening for a lot of people. Yeah. And like a lot of folks I know who are introverts, we're happy for the time at home. And for me, I got shoved off of a hamster wheel of what's the next teaching tour, what's the next business trip. And as disruptive as it has been for my business, it has been a gift. Not to bright side it, but it has been a gift to just get a chance to hit the giant pause button and figure out, okay, what is it exactly I want to do and how do I want to spend my time?
Yeah, I bet it's been nice for you and your husband to spend a lot of quality time and not just coming to and from airports and
Yeah, but yesterday we were talking and I said, honey, you have to understand, he got off Facebook because he was getting so frustrated by human beings.
Sure.
And I said, you know, honey, you got to realize I'm the one person you talk to. So sometimes I'm going to get tired of you telling me every single thing in your head. I said it with love, of course.
Of course. Of course. A life without Facebook, it would be, I think, a good life. So... except for I have like just enough. I've really come to love Facebook for fan groups.
Oh, for sure.
And I'm not really interested in joining Reddit. I don't quite grok how it works, even though I will Google things and specifically put Reddit because I know I can find good information there. But it just has never made sense in my brain.
Yeah.
So I don't want to have to leave the fan communities I'm in for Reddit or for... I don't know, like making forums from scratch again, like that also doesn't interest me right now.
Yeah, so understandable.
But I would say it's being involved in those fan groups is part of how I like finally in my 40s just embraced being a fan of things and loving. I think Hamilton was the first thing I was like, I'm going to. It wasn't a choice to unironically love it because I just loved it.
Nice.
But to allow myself to just be obsessed with a piece of art and spend a lot of time and money consuming the art. Mm-hmm. And then I've got some podcasts I've gotten into that I've traveled for to see live shows. And now I'm so grateful that at the time I felt kind of self-conscious that I was flying to LA to see a podcast. But now in this world where we can't travel, who knows when we'll see a live show again.
Yeah.
I'm really grateful to have racked up some of those experiences.
Yeah. Yeah. My fandom, it's not what we were talking about here today, but the thing I'm really enjoying the fandom of is RuPaul's Drag Race.
Yes.
I think I started about season 6 or 7. And then truly the season 12 through this was like the one thing I look forward to each week because we don't have things to look forward to right now, you know? So that really like put it in the forefront. And then it was like, oh, wait a second. I can watch the first seasons on Hulu. So this weird thing of hearing all these names and all these like iconic moments and now to actually go way back to the beginning and get to see them. But the fact that with RuPaul's Drag Race, you've got so many of the queens have podcasts and have YouTube channels. So you really can nerd out and be like, okay, now I get to watch this part about this episode. Now I get to watch, and I get to watch the Untucked. And it's just like, it's a very good like unfolding of lots of different ways to interact with it.
Yeah, the expanded universe of RuPaul's Drag Race is math. It is like the Marvel universe. Because Nicole Byer, she has a RuPaul, she's got a podcast about Drag Race.
Oh, I didn't know that. I've seen her on the show. That's awesome.
She's a judge on the show sometimes. She has like 6 podcasts, so I don't know which one the drag one is, but she also has a lot of the queens as guests on Why Won't You Date Me, which are just fascinating conversations with them about what it was like dating before the show, after the show. Did they date in drag or out of drag? Who do they date? Do they date on the road? So those episodes are fantastic.
Well, and Leah, you just gave me 2 new podcasts to discover. So... the magic is happening right now.
Yes, it is. That's what happens when we talk about the things we love.
Yeah, totally. That's awesome.
So what are we here to talk about today?
So I want to tell you how I discovered this thing before I tell you what I discovered.
Okay.
I was, I think, 12 or 13, and I grew up with a piece of work as a father and a difficult household to navigate with a very angry father, alcoholic father. And my mom's sister, my aunt Nancy, also known as Annie Nanny, Nanny and Mike, when they would go away, they would let me stay at their trailer park home. And this is in Fridley, Minnesota, I think they were in Fridley, doesn't matter. Anyway, in Minnesota, suburban Twin Cities. And I felt so grown up and so excited to get to stay alone in their trailer park home. In their trailer. And it was just the best thing ever. So what they would do is take me to the video store, the good old video store. Mm-hmm. And I got to pick out some movies to watch while I was alone, blissfully alone, quiet
amazing.
And safe, right?
Yep.
And I was looking at the shelves and this box popped out at me, this VHS tape popped out, and it was a bright yellow cover with a black drawing. Mm-hmm. It was black and yellow, super graphic. And I'm like, oh, what's that? And it was this movie called Harold and Maude.
I love Harold and Maude. I love it. Yes.
So I knew absolutely nothing about it. It was truly just the graphic, bright, high contrast, visually appealing to Brandy Aggerbeck cover. And I popped it in the VHS machine, and I swear that movie was made for me. Like, that was just that feeling at that age of this is for me. It was just like, part of it was the Cat Stevens soundtrack.
Yep.
In my family, every household had Tea for the Tillerman and Teaser and the Fire Cat on LP. Like, that was just my every aunt, my parents, we all had those things. So Cat Stevens was
everywhere. So you start it and you hear, I forget what the first song in it, but the whole soundtrack is Cat Stevens.
And so that was, instant. And then just the fact that it was dark, like, I love black comedies. I just love things that are dark and weird. And it was, this, goofy, quirky female character and this baby face lanky guy, young guy. And it was just, I just loved every freaking thing about it. Like, the fact that it was about her and being so self-expressive and being exactly who she wanted to be was just the best. And that was, so then it became the, how do I get a copy of this? And with the soundtrack, there is two songs that were never on a regular Cat Stevens album, but you could find them on this one particular album. So it was like, at that point, CD. So it was like hunting down the Footsteps in the Dark CD so I could get those last two songs.
Wow.
Make my mixtape of the soundtrack.
I love it. Yeah, I don't know how Harold and Maude came into our house. I'm a twin, and Harold and Maude was more my sister's favorite movie than mine. But when you're twins with one TV, with one VCR, you watch all the same things.
Totally.
And so, like I said, I don't know how it came into the house, but we would rent an extra VCR from U-Haul. When U-Haul had a video selection and rental TV equipment. So you would rent a VCR from them in like a giant U-Haul orange case. And we had our own VCR, and then we'd rent a bunch of movies, tape them all, and then take the extra VCR back to U-Haul. And then we would have like all these tapes, a library. And each library would have like three movies on it. So I don't remember what was on the tape, but in high rotation were like Good Morning Vietnam and Harold and Maude, both of which when I rewatched as an adult, I was like, these were big themes for us to be watching as early as like 12, 13, 14.
Yeah. Yeah.
And oh boy, I missed a lot. Yeah. There was so much I didn't understand about Harold and Maude until I rewatched it as a grown up.
Yeah.
And then I think I understood a little bit more the parents' perspective too, of like, we don't understand this relationship. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think it's one that as you grow up watching it, there are layers.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. For sure. I'm not sure exactly when I picked up what, because it was watched all the time. But I know that one of the influences, I have a theory based on my experience with Harold and Maude, which is that if you, a movie you see at about that age, like 11, 12, 13, imprints your romantic type.
Okay.
Which made me very attracted to very thin, tall, baby-faced men. So I know that was set with that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not The Man I Married, which is absolutely fantastic. But for a while, I'm like, just that instant, like, honing device on ding, ding, ding.
Yeah.
And I've run this theory past other people, and it doesn't get a lot of traction. But I love that I asked one man who had a grown daughter, and he's like, "Oh my God, my daughter loved Lady Hawk, and she married a man who looked like Rutger Hauer." I hope I'm getting the actor's name right in the right movie, but that's what my memory tells me. And he was like, "Oh my yes, your theory holds true."
It's true. I think it's true. It's I watched a lot of John Cusack. Anything John Cusack starred in, I watched a lot of that. And like I said, Good Morning Vietnam. So like a nerdy guy with a wicked sense of humor, I guess, is what you get with a John Cusack rom-com lead and Robin Williams in Vietnam. You find it because your aunt and uncle are going to give you one of your Airbnb nights at their house, exactly. A night of respite,
exactly,
of videos. So then was that then the one you rented all the time until you finally were able to buy it, or were you able to buy it soon?
You know, that's a good question. I know that I'm pretty sure I probably found a way to buy it because I don't remember not having it. But I think definitely the soundtrack part was the first step. And then the second step was getting the VHS tape. And then the, segue into other discoveries, yes, was that, I went to, the library. I've always been a huge library fan. And that was another safe place where I could go and be at the library for hours. Mm-hmm. And, all my life, I've just spent, you know, time going up and down stacks, like finding a good, you know, number in the card catalog,
yeah,
and seeing what's near those books. And I found this book by Danny Perry called Cult Movies. And I just, you know, of course, I checked it out and I pored over every freaking entry.
Yeah.
And I was so fascinated by these weird movies, like just weird. And I mean, thankfully, this is, you know, a plus in my household was being weird was not a problem.
Right.
So being self-expressive and being weird, totally fine. So then it was sort of this quest of finding these different movies. And that was the segue into my eighth grade obsession, which is Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Okay.
Which so also imprinted the gender bending male attraction.
Yeah. Yep.
I think I'm not alone in that one.
You're not alone. So did you found Rocky Horror through a book about cult movies?
Exactly. So Harold and Maude was a listing, which I had discovered from that fateful trailer park evening, and then discovered Rocky Horror from that.
Okay. And was your first time seeing Rocky Horror a VHS tape or a theater?
I saw it in the book. Then I bought the soundtrack LP. Okay.
Yep.
And then I bought the audience participation LP. So I heard the entire movie without ever seeing it. And I knew all the callbacks. So they actually made an album that was a recording of the movie with the audience.
Wow. Like, I never knew that existed. Because the first time I went to see it in a theater, I was like, how do you know?
Right.
How do you people know what to yell? You get to do this once a year and you all know all the things. And it was very overwhelming because it was just a mystery. I mean, at some level, it's like going to church or synagogue for the first time. You're like, oh, we're standing up. We're sitting down. Why are you kneeling? What's happening? It was very much that feeling of being an outsider. But you, you got the participation guide. So now this is before you have yet to see the movie?
Yes. Yes. So, and I think, you know, the fact that you just said like going to church and not knowing the norms and the rituals, you know, so I didn't grow up with any religion at all. So the very rare occasions I've been in a church, I'm like, what is happening? Like anyone references anything in the Bible, I have no idea what they're talking about. But when I watch Rocky Horror Picture Show, it is like going to church because it's all the rituals. And it's so freaking comforting. So it's just this weird, you know, and there was one time where I put the DVD in and it dawned on me that this is my church. And it is the don't dream it, be it, and the self-expression and, you know, all the similar kind of weirdos being weirdos kind of themes.
Yeah. I mean, if you're looking for a modern church to join, it's not a bad one.
I like it.
It's good. It's creative. It is a safe space. It's a place where, like, I think a lot of kids in, I think about the Midwest. You're from Minnesota. I'm from Indiana. So I think there are probably thousands of teenagers across the generations who are Rocky Horror Picture Show
especially before the internet, especially before you could go on Tumblr and realize there are people out there in the world like you. You go to a Rocky Horror Picture Show and you're like, oh, wait, there are people. And that absolutely served a probably a different purpose in the 80s and 90s than it does today.
Yeah. And it, I mean, just to make it explicit, I mean, I happen to be straight, but super strong ally. And, you know, for queer kids, what that movie meant, especially.
Yeah.
My mom was she was a hairdresser for years and years, and then she became a wig stylist. And way back when I was, you know, about that age, she started working at this wig shop where she would have classes after hours, and she would teach the crossdressers how to do their wigs. So then we said crossdressers, and it was crossdressers, and because she's like, they want to look beautiful, and I want to help them know how to take care of themselves. And so for me, that wasn't, you know, there was no taboo or weirdness. It was just like, oh, yes, this is a person being who they are, like, beautiful. Yeah.
When did you actually get to see it in the theater?
I saw it probably about a year later. So our high school was grades 9 through 12. And it's sort of, you know, not surprising. I was born 40. I always joke I was born 40. You know, like partly because I think that's who I was, partly because I had to be.
Yeah.
If you're picking up on this theme of coping and surviving. But I always had older friends. And so I made these older friends, and part of the benign neglect that also happened in my household was, you know, no curfew. I think they just kind of knew I was the kind of kid who wasn't going to, you know,
yeah, they didn't have to put a time on you to keep you safe because you were already 40 years old and you were going to keep yourself safe.
Yes,
and you're going to get everybody home and you're going to be late because you made sure everybody else got home first.
Pretty much. I had older friends. They took me to the Uptown in Minneapolis, and it was everything. And it was, you know, it was going to see Rocky Horror at the Uptown. And then it was required to go to Perkins restaurant. I don't know how widespread Perkins are, but, you know, breakfast for dinner kind of place. You had to go to Perkins and eat French fries at what, 2 in the morning or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. My hometown is a Denny's, Denny's town. But when I got to college, I went to college in Decatur, Illinois.
Yeah.
And that's when I was introduced to Perkins.
Yes.
Right. So is the Uptown Theater in Minneapolis, is it like a vaudeville theater, like a music box or...
Like, yeah, I mean, it's definitely one of the old school theaters. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And was Rocky Horror a monthly? Was it like a monthly event or
quarter? I think it was every week. And it was it even every Friday and Saturday? That I'm not sure about. But not that I went weekly, because I mean, so one of the things I was too young to drive at that point, but I don't drive. A whole nother story for another time about family dysfunction. But so I was always kind of at the mercy of who else was going. But, you know, so every so often we'd go, we'd get gussied up. And so those high school friends who were older had even older friends who were like 20, who they had a band called Love Stains. And the band Love Stains decided they were going to do a cover of The Time Warp.
All right.
Or the Fridley 49ers Day talent show.
Okay.
Right. So my hometown, the kind of sidewalk sale / parade / town celebration annually was the Fridley 49ers Days. And I got to be Columbia.
Wow.
In this performance of The Time Warp.
For the live performance of the cover.
Live performance. Yeah. And I was probably like 14 or 15. And I just thought it was the most glamorous thing ever. And a couple of my classmates were just like, you know, I remember their look of like looking at me going, who is she that she's on stage with these older people? And it was like, you know, the most exotic thing ever.
Right.
As exotic as Fridley gets. With Perkins and, you know, trailer parks.
This is totally unrelated.
Yes.
I thought 49ers were gold miners in California. Were they also gold miners in Minnesota?
You know what? I should know the answer to this. I have shed a lot of the Fridley details over time.
You could tell me a convincing lie and we'll put it on Wikipedia and then it will be true.
Perfect. That's how things work now.
Yeah.
You know, it's something about the establishment of Fridley. And I don't know if it was, I don't know. But it was something about when Fridley got established. And that's
but that was like the town festival days.
Yes. Yep.
And you got to get on stage.
Yes.
Fully dressed up in one of your first amazing costumes.
In sparkles. And thankfully, for the record, those older dudes were good dudes. So, you know, if anyone's thinking there's like an air of, you know, danger around this, no, just nerdy people, already nerdy people.
When's the last time you went to a Rocky Horror Live?
It's been a while. I think it was probably at the 400 in Rogers Park. So here in Chicago in the North Side, this studio or this theater. But I have to say, backing up to Harold and Maude.
Yes.
The first time I got to see Harold and Maude in the theater was last fall at the Gene Siskel Film Center. And I was so freaking excited to actually see it on the big stage or the big screen. And I'm sitting, you know, and the Gene Siskel has pretty small theaters, and it's a small theater. It's packed. I'm just beside myself. Like, I haven't been like that excited about something, you know. It's that kid excitement of like, I get to see the thing I love.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I'm watching it and I'm just like, who knows how many times I teared up. I probably, you know, half a dozen times at least. But the thing that got me, the thing that I could not believe, and I don't know if just the world is too cynical for this, at the very end of the movie, I clapped and I was the only person who clapped.
Oh. Now,
what is happening that I am the only person in the theater clapping for this brilliant movie?
I have to say, so I saw it maybe 2 years ago at the Music Box.
Yeah. Harold and Maude.
Yeah. They were doing a film series called, like, Is It Still Funny? Of taking comedies from the 60s, 70s, 80s.
Yeah.
And showing them to a modern audience to determine, like, did it stand the test of time as a comedy? So that was a real treat, because having only ever seen it on a TV screen, you just can't grasp, you know, like, the Field of Daisies, the landscapes, the... just the like broadness of the shots. It's such a vastly shot. The scenes are, I think vast is the best word for it. And when you see it on a screen and you can really understand, I don't know, like how dynamic and beautiful it was. Cause when you watch it on TV, it seems like a really beautiful small story that really, I don't know, that felt like it grew in the theater. And I can assure you, the Music Box audience applauded.
Oh, good. So, thank you.
Yes. That's,
I feel vindicated. Thank you.
Yeah. And it was fun. It was a lot of people. It was women our age, like women in their like 40s and 50s, bringing their teenagers, their teen girls to see it for the first time as like a mother-daughter event. And that was really cool to see as well.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And was it funny?
Yeah. 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 It was much funnier than I remembered.
I think, and in the Gene Siskel Film Center audience, smaller numbers, but it was, people laughed and it was so funny to hear the laughter and the uncomfortable laughter, but as at how the laughter grew over the course of the movie, because I there must've been a lot of people in that theater who had never seen it, but that was just my guess. That's my guess because of like that, the reserve. You know, that sort of feeling of like, it's new, so you're not in on it, right?
I guess if you don't, if you've never seen it, for example, the scene where I'm going to mess it up. Is it Hari Kari? Is that the suicide?
Yeah. Yep. Yes.
The knife suicide?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Where he fake kills himself and then she actually kills herself? She messes up the
knife? She doesn't. No.
He doesn't.
So, right. So I just, if I want to give a little bit of context, by the way, spoiler alert. Right. So just to give folks a context, Harold has such a, his mom is a piece of work and she's very, very prim and proper and rich and status driven. And so he likes to fake these suicides, and there's more reasons than that, but that's the sort of pushing against his mom's perfection. He stages these suicides, and at a certain point she decides he needs to get married. She signs up for a dating service, And the third of the three dates is this Harry Carey scene. And she's an actress. And she's like this totally ridiculous, over the top, really gammy actress. And she, instead of being freaked out like the other two dates, sees the Harry Carey and is like, this is just the most beautiful thing she's ever seen. So she at one point, she kind of taps the knife on her hand.
She makes sure it's fake.
Exactly. Yeah. And then she enacts her own Romeo and Juliet scene where she kills herself with the stage knife. And then he gets up and he's like, what on earth just happened? But it's all three of those suicides, the dates are just beautiful.
I drove a hearse in high school and college.
Did you really?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, you are now my superhero, my role model.
My dad, my parents met in art school. And one day my dad, his career was, he was a house painter and then became like a master at faux finishing.
Yeah.
So he was driving down the highway one day and saw a number of hearses for sale. And he was like, you could really put a lot of ladders in the back of a hearse. Like it's a very practical car for transporting paint materials.
Perfect. Resourceful.
And they're like well-maintained Cadillacs. Oh. So we had a 76 Cadillac hearse that so some things to know about driving a hearse.
Yeah.
There's no radio because that would be disrespectful.
Yeah. Okay.
So you have to put a radio in.
Yeah.
The doors in the back don't have handles on the inside because passengers are dead.
Yes.
So my dad had to install handles on the inside of the doors, which he did with the rope and the handle that you would use water skiing. Yep. So he took the rope, he cut a hole in the door, and he put the rope down and like tied it on to the door thing, and you would pull the rope. You'd pull the rope and then like kick the door. To open the door if you were sitting in the back of the hearse.
Yeah.
And then he sawed out part of the floor and put the pilot chairs from our like Econoline van.
Yeah.
Into the hearse and put like the fold down back, you know, the bench to bed in the back.
Yes. Yes.
And then we got a sound activated waving hand that we put in the back window. And then we drove it to Texas for Christmas.
Yep.
And we like stopped in Arkansas and picked up one grandma and then drove all the way to Texas in a hearse. And people in small towns in Arkansas and Texas see a hearse coming and they pull over. So this whole way on this road trip, people kept pulling over to let us pass.
Brilliant.
It was amazing.
Okay, so your dad and my dad could hang out. I hope your dad was far nicer than my dad, but my dad was also extremely creative and resourceful.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of things where we had a lot of things around, like the rope, the nautical rope or the skiing rope, water skiing rope. A lot of things that were like things that should have been other things turned into other things.
Yeah.
But one day, I was up in my room and my dad yells for me, which is usually not a good sign. And I come down and I'm kind of, you know, on edge. And he goes, Hey, Brandy, I got something to show you. I'm like, okay. And, he worked for FMC. He worked at this giant plant and they had like a company store, which was always just random stuff.
Right.
And apparently somebody, I could get this wrong. Maybe it wasn't at work, but he had bought a fish house. So for those who don't know, when you go ice fishing, when it's cold, you put a little house on the ice, you drill the hole in the ice and you hang out in a tiny little box to ice fish. Now, my dad wasn't even particularly an ice fisherman, but he bought this ice house. Well, he was also a total gearhead we had 13 cars in the yard.
Okay. In various states of...
Well, usually only the number of working cars equal the number of drivers in the household. So most of them were just hanging out in the yard. So he would go to the junkyard Wednesdays after work and Saturdays. It was just the thing. So he tells me, you know, come out here, see this thing. And he had taken this ice house. So he opens up the door to this ice house, and there's like, you know, one window in the ice house, and below it's a little drop down table, you know, great. On the, so imagine like a spam can. So it's basically the shape of a spam can with a door on the shorter side. Uh-huh. And on the opposite wall from the door is a pinup. There's just a, you know, a pinup, like old school vintage pinup in a frame. But on the long wall opposite the window, my dad had been collecting shag carpeting from custom vans in all sorts of different colors. And on this wall, he created truly one of the most beautiful things I've seen in my life. And I say that as an aesthete. I say that as an art lover. He made a sunset in shag carpeting. So imagine inlaid shag carpeting.
Yeah.
Was the image of a sunset over a lake. So the sun was one color. The reflection in the water was another color. Trees along this lake. We never took a picture of it. Every so often I search it thinking maybe somebody has found this, photographed it, and put it on the internet.
Yeah.
But yes. Stunning.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, it can come back. The stuff can show. We got a painting of the Pink Panther that my dad did in 1967, showed up on Goodwill.com.
Wow.
And someone had already bought it, like an interior designer in Indianapolis had bought it. And we got in touch with her and we were like, could we please buy the painting? This painting of our dad's that we've never seen before. And she was like, sure. She charged us a little bit more than she bought it from Goodwill. And we're like, totally fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, so sometimes the your parents' art can show back up on the internet, thanks to the internet.
Nice. Nice.
All right. So we've talked about Harold and Maude. Had your husband seen it?
No.
So you got to introduce it to him.
I did. And he is the person least like me I've ever dated, but that's the best because there's less overlap and more difference. And there's, you know, a ton of strengths in that, but it's extremely rare. We find things, pop culture, movies, mostly movies that we want to see. Cause he's, you know, pretty standard nerd dude who loves fantasy stuff and sci-fi and superhero stuff. And I'm making him sound incredibly mainstream and he's not, but anyway. So I just told him like, look, we're going to have to watch this. Like, that's required. And we watched it together and there was sort of a quiet to him as he watched this, because I think he was enjoying it and it wasn't the normal kind of thing he'd watch. So he was kind of enjoying it as something different. He was certainly enjoying it and respecting it as something I love. And there was, I wish I could remember. There was something else. Oh, I had given him my favorite book, which is Mr. Wilson's Cabinet of Wonder by Lawrence Weschler. And it's this slim little book about the Museum of Jurassic Technology in LA. Do you know about this museum?
No.
Oh, well, I truly don't. I never want to actually spoil this for anybody. It's this very weird little museum in LA. It's sort of
so the museum is real.
The museum is real.
Is the book fiction?
Nope. The book is the first half of the book is about David Wilson, Mr. Wilson, creating this museum. And then the second half of the book is about sort of the concept of Wunderkammern, like the Cabinet of Wonders, the idea that Europeans would go to the New World and bring back these weird things that nobody had ever seen. So, you know, literally having a physical cabinet of taxidermied something or natural something or just something so odd that it became a conversation piece. And the book is, I love it. Like I love to give Mr. Wilson's Cabinet of Wonder to people who, especially when they start grad school, because you've hit the point in your education where you're like, I know some stuff and I'm about to study real hard this thing I know. And then this book is about what you know and what you don't know. So he had read that book, and then I showed him Harold and Maude. And this was one of those super lovely moments where after seeing Harold and Maude, I think it was like the next day or 2 days, he messages me and he says, I get it. You love wonder. You love that sense of wonder, which is 200% true. And to see him put the pieces together and make that observation was, of course, you know, pitter patter, and I'm getting choked up even, you know, telling you about this. So yeah. So he got it. Even if it wasn't what he would pull off the shelf. It was, you know, he understood what it meant to me.
Was there anything else from the book about cult movies that you tracked down, or you found Rocky Horror and that was the main one?
That was, you know, it's funny. I actually looked up the book and got a sort of a Kindle version. So Danny Perry made 3 volumes of these books, and there were about 40 movies each. I looked at the table of contents for the original book, and there wasn't anything that took hold as strong as those two.
Yeah.
But definitely, I mean, I've always been interested in the weird movies. And funnily enough, just this last week, we were, Jeremy and I, my husband and I, were hanging out, and we're like, yeah, we should watch something. And we had done something. I don't know if you saw this post on Facebook. We made Couch Pod.
Yes.
Yes. So we pushed all our couches together into this massive, beautiful, what we call Couch Pod. And we're like, well, we've got Couch Pod and we have snacks to eat. So what should we watch? And I think it was Hulu. Anyway, Zardos. So yes. Right. So Zardos is listed, and he looks at me and I go, I'd watch Zardos. And he's like, okay, the fastest we've ever decided on a movie ever.
Amazing.
And I had seen it years ago, only once, and thought it was like this weird, who knows what kind of mess. And I'm watching this whole thing, and it actually holds together a lot better. Like, it's far more cohesive once you kind of get, you know, oh, okay, here's what's going on.
Yeah.
And I'm watching this thing, and he is like, he is tuned into this the whole time, never turning away from this movie. And, you know, so I'm noticing, I'm like, oh, he's really enjoying this. Turns out he had never freaking seen it. So for him, he was doing the just kind of trying to hold on.
Right.
Hold on to this ride of like, what is this floating head? Why is Sean Connery in these, like, this red diaper and bandoliers?
Yep.
And like, what? So that was pretty fun to experience, see him experience that one for the first time.
I have not watched it, but there's an episode of How Did This Get Made about it. Like, one of their classic top 5 episodes is Zardoz. So people in the How Did This Get Made Facebook group I'm in have been talking about how it's on Hulu.
Yeah.
I think it's on Hulu.
Yeah.
That it's time to watch it. So I need to put it in for a rewatch.
Oh yeah. 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 It's, John Borman. So he's like, you know, legit director who the previous movie he did was Deliverance. And you watch this thing and it's like, it's one of those, you know, world building movies where it's like, this is, you know, it's sci-fi and whatever, of course, that's going to be part of the equation, but there's just sort of this, like, there's a little bit of a preamble from this one character, which is literally a floating head against a black background. And then the next thing you see is this massive stone head in the air coming down to its acolytes, mm-hmm. Who are all men, who are all in red diapers and bandoliers. And I'm going to leave it there. Those who've seen the movie are filling in what happens next. But you're just kind of thrown into this thing where you're like, okay, so this is okay. Okay. So that's a thing. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's a thing. You just spend the whole movie going, okay, okay, that's a thing. Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah, I need to watch it. Something I watched this weekend that now I realize I think has some elements of Harold and Maude in it is a movie called Straight Up.
Oh, I don't know that one.
It just went to Netflix like 2 weeks ago. The director, writer, star is, his name is James Sweeney, and it's shot in 4:3 is the aspect ratio is 4:3. And it's these like stunning architecture. So the shots are stunning, and the conceit is that they're professional house sitters. So they get to be in these architecturally beautiful spaces that are like way above their age and pay grade. So like, that's a nice thing that they do to make it, to explain away why they're in a stunning, beautiful space.
Love it.
And the story, it's about a man in his 20s who's gay and highly anxious and so afraid of sex that he's like, well, but maybe I'm actually straight, so I'm going to try dating a woman. Mm. And gets into like a platonic, deep platonic relationship with a woman. And it's about their relationship as they try to figure out, is conversation enough? And it is beautifully shot. And it's a lot of like rapid fire dialogue, comedy screwball, or Gilmore Girls, or Sorkin level dialogue speed.
Yeah.
But beautifully shot. It was really wonderful. And awesome. Not enough people have seen it.
Yeah.
So I'm telling you to watch it I have someone else to talk about.
I will.
I need more people to see it. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. So that reminds me of, you know, when you suggest new things, I'm always calibrating. Is this something I can craft to?
Right.
Or is it like, if it's a podcast, can I work on graphic design or draw during it? You know, sort of like, is it the right, you know, type of thing? And so when you talked about just let them go, for me, that is, and as you, before you even said that, I'm like, oh yeah, that's totally the, I gotcha. But for me, that's Law and Order. Like Law and Order is a public utility.
Yep.
And I, you know, so of course I TiVo it, and like, I, you know, I just, if I need that comfort. And the thing, so this is another difference between my husband and I am, just generally speaking, I'm a very, very, very big picture strategy. Mm-hmm. How does everything fit together person, and not a details person. And what happens is I can watch Law and Order for however many decades, because I don't remember the details, but if he's in the room, we'll start it. And within 5 minutes, he's like, oh yeah, this is the thing where the thing happens. And he remembers all the details. And I'm like, all right. I mean, it doesn't bother me. I'll still watch it. But he's like, once he's figured it out.
You're surprised by the suspect every time.
Well, not exactly surprised.
I mean, but there's a formula, but.
And I always like to say at minute 37, you are going to get Jack McCoy's look of indignance. Like, that's just the deal. And that's the comfort of it. You know, it's like why, watching House is a show I haven't went back and rewatched, but that same kind of like, you know, there's going to be two misdiagnoses before, you know, they figure out the third one. And I find those formulas comforting, and just seeing what the different variations are. Same thing with James Bond movies. I didn't discover James Bond movies till, I love the way I discovered James Bond movies, which was I was working in DC and I'm like, oh, I got a little extra time in DC. What should I go do? And there was a spy museum. I'm like, I want to know about us. Have you been?
No, but I've seen it from the highway, and it's the way it's the design of the building from the outside. The word spy is like three stories tall.
Are you thinking DC or New York?
DC, I think.
Oh,
I have not been. I have not been, but I am excited by a future where we go to museums again. So tell me about it.
Yes, right? So I'm like, oh, spy museum. So I go to the spy museum, and it is brilliant. Like a library nerd, I'm also a total museum nerd. And it's a great mix of historical spies, tradecraft, and spies in pop culture. So it's kind of like equal parts, those three things.
So I know we're going to get to James Bond, but is tradecraft like a lock pick, and here's invisible ink, and here's
the
shoe with a gun in it.
Exactly. The shoe with a knife in it and the tiny, tiny camera. Yeah. Yeah. The actual, and one of the things they do is when you walk in, there's a couple doorways. I don't know if it's still true, but at the first visit, you basically, as you entered, you got a false identity. And you're supposed to like learn about this, about your cover. And then at a couple points in the museum, they asked you questions about your cover to see if you still remembered it. So it's like just kind of a neat little, you know, put you in the, yeah. Yeah. I'm a big spy movie fan. But strangely, I'd never seen any of the James Bond movies.
Really?
Like, I think there's so many people, especially men, who their dads really like James Bond. So it was like in their blood, you know, part of their upbringing, but I had never seen any of them. So that summer, which I think was around like 2006-ish, that became the summer of Bond. And I watched, you know, each one in order, and like Law and Order or House, you know, it's like, there's the elements, and you just, I actually read a book where I was perusing the library shelves, mm-hmm. and pulled out this book about Ian Fleming, and Ian Fleming said, you know, it's like a chess game. You know what all the pieces are. You just don't know exactly how they're going to be moved or played. Yeah. And the same kind of thing, like there's going to be the Bond girl, and there's going to be the villain, and the villain's going to have at least one henchman. And, you know, so, you know, there's kind of that pleasure of, okay, who's going to be this in this one?
Have you ever watched the French 117? It's a French comedy, spy comedy based on Bond. So Music Box, the theater, also has Music Box Films, right? That they're a distributor of foreign films.
Oh, cool.
And many, many years ago, I taught them how to do social media.
Nice.
So I helped them with the North American release of Cairo, Nest of Spies.
Okay. I feel like I've heard that title.
It's a comedy. It's in French and Arabic. And it's a series of, it's shot exactly like a Bond movie, but it's a French comedy.
Nice.
So it's got like a little bit of kind of airplane humor to it, or not Liam Neeson, wrong comedian. Who was that guy who was in Airplane, and then he also had some cop comedy movies?
Oh,
White Hair.
Yeah. I'm completely blanking on his name, too. I know so many people are shouting at us right now. Leslie Nielsen.
Ha-ha. Not Liam Neeson.
Not so funny. Nah. I mean, maybe he is as a human, but...
not known for his comedies.
Nope.
But it's got like a flavor of those comedies, but it's in French, so it feels like very fancy. So that is a fun movie that I would suggest.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. So I've got Nicole Byer podcasts.
Yes.
Nicole Byer's podcasts. I've got Straight Up.
Straight Up. Yep.
And I've got
OSS 117.
OSS 117.
Yes.
Brilliant.
Brandy, this has been so much fun.
Yeah, totally.
I like seeing you in real time instead of just on the internet.
Exactly.
It's a treat.
Likewise.
Where can people find you on the internet? What should people know about things you're working on and ways to learn from you or work with you?
Awesome. Thank you for asking, Leah. So my site doesn't describe what I do, but people remember it. And it is loosetooth.com. And there you will see lots of videos and books and online courses about visual thinking. So how to get your ideas out of your head and onto paper to make awesome things happen. And that's the home base.
So, great. So loosetooth.com, where people might have seen on my Instagram that I am on Team Mild Cats.
Yes.
that I've got some stickers and the Social Distancing All-Stars, which are mascots you designed at the beginning of COVID.
Yep.
So that people can celebrate doing the right thing and staying home.
Yep.
And find the team that best represents their inner shelter in place spirit, I think.
Yes.
So I am a work from home mild cat.
Awesome.
And
That was a very initial response. I had to cancel a month long teaching tour or postpone. Who knows when it'll happen, but, you know, had disruption for me was not being able to go to Europe for a month. And so, you know, that kind of, you know, I was reeling and trying to figure out what to do with myself. And I thought, okay, so this is something, public health is a team sport, which is, you know, one of the designs. And it's, you know, if public health is a team sport, but we all have to keep distant from each other, how do you get that sense of camaraderie and, you know, being part of a team at a distance? So that that spawned the social distancing all-stars and coming up with these different teams, different mascots for different approaches. So the Mildcats are kind of the work from home folks who are like, I got this already. This is not any different. The shelter in place turtles love that they get to be home. It's like the coziest thing. There's about half a dozen of them, but another one is the back off badgers, who are very vigilant about the distance and the mask wearing. And, you know, it's all just meant to be, you know, just acknowledging where we're at. Thank you.
Yeah, I also got the public health as a team sport T-shirt. It's one of two or three, I would say, quarantine COVID themed shirts I got that I wear when I go grocery shopping.
Nice.
Always loosetooth.com is the place to go. That's the hub.
That's the hub.
Great. Well, thank you so much for coming today. Yeah, this was wonderful.
Leah. Likewise.
Right.
Thank you for listening to Finding Favorites with Leah Jones. Please make sure to subscribe and drop us a 5-star review on iTunes. Now, go out and enjoy your favorite things.